simply uprooting all weeds. Nonetheless, the seeds lie there, and not being completely burned, again come up with the plants sown in the field. Even after being plowed under, the weeds come up densely. Similarly, the Grihastha ashram, family life, is a field of fruitive activity. Unless the desire to enjoy family life is completely burned out, it grows up again and again. Even though camphor may be removed from a pot, the pot nonetheless retains the aroma of camphor. As long as the seeds of desire are not destroyed, fruitive activities are not destroyed. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Unless one's desires are completely transferred to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the desire for family life continues even after one has taken sannyas. Sometimes in our ISKCON society, a person out of sentiment may take sannyas, but because his desires are not burned completely, he again takes to family life, even at the risk of losing his prestige and disgracing his good name. These strong desires can be burned out completely when one fully engages in the service of the Lord in devotional service. Chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam is entitled The Forest of Enjoyment. In very clear, honest, powerful intensity is Srila Shukadeva Goswami describing the various suffering conditions in this material world that are brought about by the process of trying to find enjoyment in this material world. The source of all suffering is the desire to find pleasure in an artificial condition due to our misconception. The eternal soul is part of Krishna. As part of Krishna, qualitatively the same as Krishna, we are eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. The nature of the eternal soul is to know God and to love God and to experience the joy of that relationship through serving. However, under the spell of material illusion, our false ego becomes infatuated, and thus we, like in a dream, misconceive that we are this body and this mind. The body and the mind are just material combinations of atomic particles as well as subtle elements. And the soul wants to enjoy. So the soul is thinking it can enjoy eternal happiness and unlimited love through the contact of the body, the mind, the senses, and their objects. And we create an entire civilization with so much philosophy, poetry, technology, science, about this, around this illusion. With this human brain, which is so highly developed, the spirit soul oftentimes has to transmigrate through 8,400,000 species of life to achieve the developed, civilized brain of a human being. The human intelligence is so great that it actually has the power to fathom how to achieve the purpose of life, the eternal form, pastimes of the Supreme Personality of God. But when this human intelligence is misdirected by the perverted conception of our true identity, then we create a grand, grand system of lifestyle based around trying to enjoy sense gratification. The animals in the forest are eating, sleeping, mating, and defending in a very basic way. Human beings have the same purpose if they are not seeking self-realization. However, with this intelligence that is meant for God realization, what kind of an amazingly complex civilization we have created just to perform the same essential activities as the animals and the insects and the fish and the forest and the sea, or the birds and the air. We have big, big skyscrapers with so many modern conditions, plumbing systems, electrical systems, beautiful furniture. And we cannot enjoy any more pleasure than the dog laying in the street or the jackal laying in the jungle. We have created all philosophy, poetry, drama, various forms of entertainment, but we cannot enjoy anything more than a dog running. They are also very happy running and jumping. We have so many communication systems, computerized. Every month there's upgradements in various computer technology, scientific technology. We're shooting rocket ships trying to reach other planets. But we cannot enjoy any more pleasure than the ants just rubbing their antennas together and communicating with each other. It is the same basic principle, misused. And the more advancement civilization makes in the material platform, the more complex it becomes in its problems, and therefore the deeper and more unsolvable our sufferings become. Therefore, this forest of enjoyment is so thick, it is so dense, and we're all lost in this forest. So much so that the trees of material desires have grown so high and so deep and thick in their nature that no light can even enter into this forest. We're in complete darkness, surrounded by our own ambitions to try to enjoy material existence. There is no way to get out of this forest by our own will, by our own efforts. Therefore, Krishna explains in Gita, Daivyeshu guna mayi mama maya durabhyaya mam evam yipapadyante maya metatirayaya. this material nature of mine, which is divine because I am the controller, very difficult to overcome. Only those who surrender to me, they can easily cross beyond. It is only by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that there is any hope to come out of the entanglements of the desire for material enjoyment. However, unfortunately, in the human existence, the society is thinking that the goal of life is not to receive the mercy of the Lord to get out, but rather to make all sorts of efforts to try to somehow or other stay in this dark, deep forest of misery. To find more and more ways to incriminate ourselves in the laws of karma. And when, after births and births of this conditioning, when we finally come to the platform by the mercy of the great devotees of the Lord, where we understand that this world is a foreign land for the eternal soul. It is Martyaloka, a place of death. What am I doing here? What am I doing here is not this the most important question. The most important question is, why do I remain here? Why, even after understanding the absolute truth and understanding my eternal home in the spiritual world with Krishna, am I still trying to enjoy the incriminating activities of sense gratification in this world of death? The lower self and the higher self are at war. For the devotee who is aspiring for pure devotional service, the words of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra are saying, give up this independent desire to enjoy, utilize your mind and senses in the service of Krishna, and become purified. Sarvapadiya niramuktam tatparatvaya niramalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. The same mind and senses that are causing so much bondage when they are used in the service of Lord Rishikesh, they purify. Krishna is all pure. By remembering Him, by serving Him, by chanting His holy names and hearing His glories, we become purified. But still, the lower self is so conditioned to its bad habits of wanting to enjoy gross and subtle pleasures. We want to enjoy through our eyes seeing something beautiful, through our ears hearing something that agitates the mind, through our tongue by tasting and speaking, through our flesh by touching, through our nose by smelling. The allurements are all around us. If we analyze what's actually taking place, there's no sense to it. Our senses are just dead matter, and the objects of the senses are just dead matter. And the perceptions that the object of the senses is going to give me pleasure is a completely relative conception. It has no absolute reality whatsoever. A human being is looking at a particular object and thinking, this will give me pleasure. But when a bird sees that object, it has no charm to him. So actually, what is it? The soul under the covering of a particular false ego is identifying that certain things will give me enjoyment, but actually there's no enjoyment. The soul is separate. The soul is longing for Krishna. And then the subtle senses are looking for profit, adoration, and distinction. The soul wants to find unlimited joy in glorifying Krishna. But under the misconception of the false ego, the soul wants to find unlimited enjoyment in glorifying oneself. And the more we want to hear the glories of ourself, the more we are frustrated. The more we want to enjoy through the senses, we are frustrated. Srimad Bhagavatam describes that all of our desires to find happiness through material enjoyment will ultimately have the opposite effect. To the degree we become attached to the objects of the senses, gross and subtle, we have to suffer when they end. And it is guaranteed 100% that all of your pleasures in this world will come to an end. It may be gradual or it may be abrupt. It may be today or it may be tomorrow. A devotee has these two personalities, we may say, within himself. One lover wants to become pure and serve and glorify Krishna. And the lower conditioned self wants to enjoy material nature, acting in envy of Krishna. It's a very psychotic, insane condition where half your consciousness wants to love God and serve God, and the other half is utterly envious of God and wants to steal everything that's meant for God's pleasure for oneself. This is the position of a neophyte devotee. Krishna explains in the 11th canto that a complete fool under the illusion of material existence can somehow or other sometimes think that he's happy. And a paramahamsa who is liberated from all illusions and who's always immersed in the service of the Lord knows that he's happy. But a neophyte devotee, he's the only one who realizes factually that he's suffering. Because he knows what he should be doing and he knows what he's not doing. He knows, I can't enjoy this, but I want to enjoy this. And I'll try to enjoy this, but I'm not enjoying it. But I can't give it up. What a suffering condition. I want to surrender to Krishna. I want to chant his holy names constantly, but I'm hungry and I'm tired, and my senses have so many other priorities. This example is given in today's verse, that just as a plowsman plows his field, the purpose of plowing the field is to make the soil very soft and porous so that air can come in, the rains can come in nicely, and the seeds can grow that you plant. Another reason for plowing the field is to uproot all of the weeds that are growing. Unfortunately, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has explained to Rupa Goswami, if we don't uproot these weeds and burn them, if we don't get rid of them, but we just plow them under the ground, for the time being they may appear that they're not there, but it is just a matter of time till they begin to grow along with the plants that you have sown. In Sri Rupa Goswami's instructions given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is very, very nicely explained. How one who comes to the threshold of the path of bhakti is like a gardener. By the mercy of Guru, we are given the seed. Brahmananda Pramite Kom Bhagya Manjiva Guru Krishna Prasari Vaibhakti Kapavija. After millions and millions of births, going around from place to place, from species to species within this universe and perhaps in so many other universes, when we become supremely fortunate by the mercy of the Lord, we come in the association with a real devotee. That devotee plants the seed of devotion within our heart. That seed is the most precious thing in all of creation. But it must be watered and protected. When we water the seed, rain is falling also. The weeds of our previous conditioned desire for enjoyment also grow along with that seed. And sometimes we plow this field, and sometimes we even cut the weeds, and we think we're very advanced. But as the seed grows, to our great surprise, the weeds return and grow. And those weeds have the power to choke the devotional creeper and create terrible impediments to any of our spiritual life. In fact, if we are not very, very careful to control these weeds, then it is inevitable we will fall down from the platform of devotional service. Krishna consciousness is a science. Srila Prabhupada told us we must very carefully study and understand his books to know how this science is working, to know on which level we are having to perform Krishna conscious devotional service, and how to deal with the problems that Maya puts before us internally and externally every day. It is a great illusion when we think we are more advanced than we are. Then we are in a terribly vulnerable situation to fall down. False pride, even in spiritual life, being proud that I'm a very advanced, learned Vaishnava. I am a good sadhu. That pride will be the reason for your fall down if it is not given up. If you're sick and you think you're perfectly healthy, you will not take the proper medication. And ultimately, that disease will ruin you. Similarly, if the weeds are all there, and we are thinking that, oh, my garden is so nice, my devotional flower is blooming so beautifully, and all the weeds have been conquered by my sincere efforts. But those weeds are there, and they are growing, but we are not willing to see them for what they are. And thus, they choke your devotion. Temporarily bring you down. Therefore, we find great devotees, they never consider themselves great devotees. They consider themselves very humble, insignificant servants of the Lord and his devotees. And in that condition, they are always very careful, very cautious. One time in Boston, Srila Prabhupada, we know he's a great Paramahamsa, Vaishnava. But still, great Paramahamsa Vaishnavas, when they preach in this world, they act and speak in such a way that we could learn from them. So on this particular morning in Boston, he was looking at his small deities of Radha and Krishna in his room. And he said to one of his devotees, with tears in his eyes, very sincere, he said, I am simply praying to Radha and Krishna to protect me from Maya. He is not saying,
I am so advanced, Maya cannot touch me.
I am simply praying to Radha and Krishna to protect us from Maya. So he is saying this because this is the way we should be thinking. At every stage, until we come to that platform, when we come to the platform of pure, unalloyed, spontaneous love, still, while we're in this material world, we may have no attraction for Maya. But we see how everyone else is under the spell of Maya, and we just continue to pray, Radha and Krishna, please keep me in your devotional service. So this desire for enjoyment may never awaken in my heart. The Varnashram system. Society is designed in such a way that everyone has all opportunity to perfect their life and go back home, back to God. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we understand that Daivi Varnashram is to bring us to the point, wherever we may be now, to that place where we have pure, unalloyed devotion to Sri Krishna and never have to take birth in this material world again unless it is Krishna's desire to serve Him. We do not come to this movement simply to become neophyte devotees and remain neophyte devotees forever. Our goal is pure love of God, Krishna prema. Our goal is Goloka Vrindavan. Najanamna janamna sundari kavitam vaja gadisha kamane mama janmani janmani swari bhavatam bhakti ravaritaki. This is our goal. No desire for wealth and all the pleasures that wealth may bring. No desire for the pleasures of self-attraction. No desires for fame or followers. Not even desire for liberation from all sufferings. But rather desire for unmotivated, uninterrupted service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if it is His desire, birth after birth after birth. Society should be arranged in such a way that we have this opportunity. And therefore, there must be proper training. Brahmacharis, Grihasthas, Vanaprasthas, Sannyasis should be very, very nicely trained in an atmosphere where they are satisfied to be devotees. And that training should go to the point where we achieve the spiritual world. Sometimes when a new person comes, we put them in bhakta program or bhakti program, and they get very nice training. But then after that, they may never be trained in any way again for the rest of their lives as a devotee. What are the higher states of Vaishnava etiquette? Unless we learn how to properly serve devotees, deal with devotees according to their particular relationship or position with us, we cannot make proper spiritual advancement. Because our advancement comes through service. And without understanding the proper method of serving, you are not really rendering a high quality of service. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Srila Sanatana Goswami that Vaishnava, the observance of Vaishnava etiquette is the ornament that makes the devotee beautiful in the eyes of God. And if our service does not attract Krishna, then His mercy will not bestow upon us, and there's no question of spiritual advancement without the mercy of Krishna coming through Paripura into our lives. So as we make spiritual advancement, we must understand how to guard against offenses and how to please the Vaishnavas and please the Guru, and how to serve the conditioned souls in such a way according to Krishna's teachings. That is Vaishnava etiquette. And as we make spiritual advancement, we get deeper understandings of these things, and we need more and more guidance. The philosophy of Krishna consciousness. When we're new devotees, we understand theoretically the basics of Krishna consciousness, hopefully. However, as we make little advancement, Maya will test us in various ways that we never expected could ever happen to us. Sometimes when we're new devotees, we think, now I'm having so many problems, but once I'm in this movement for 2 or 3 years, I will be so advanced, there will be no more problems in my life. However, at every stage of advancement, different varieties of problems come into your life. Essentially, they're the same problems, but they take different dresses. The only problem is forgetting Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada explained that Krishna never allows Maya to test you beyond your capacity to resist that test if you surrender to Krishna. So the more advanced you become, the more intensely Maya will test you to somehow or other give you the chance to either go up or down. So therefore, as we're progressing in Krishna consciousness, we need deeper and deeper understandings of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And as preachers, it is our most sacred service to help others become Krishna conscious. So therefore, there is a great need for devotees to be trained very nicely, continuously, as they're making spiritual advancement. It comes through Srila Prabhupada's books, and it comes through sharing our realizations with one another and learning the actual practical value of Srila Prabhupada's teachings by senior Vaishnavas. Otherwise, what happens is what we find in this verse. A person takes to the Grihastha ashram, practices devotional service for some time, and somehow or other, due to a lack of proper cultivation of Krishna consciousness on a continuous level, the weeds begin to grow again. We have seen within our society very enthusiastic brahmacharis. When they get to their middle ages, sometimes they decide, I want to marry. And then they oftentimes, at least temporarily, lose their taste for any act of devotional service. They may have faith in Krishna's God, and they may have some desire to be Krishna conscious, but the whole standard of their life has gone down, down, down. Very little sadhana, very little active service, very little compassionate outreach to preach to others. Other times, grihasthas, when they first are at a certain stage of their Krishna consciousness, the husband and the wife are very united in just wanting to serve Guru's order and serve the Vaishnavas and preach, distribute books and make the world Krishna conscious.
But after some time, they basically just thinking,
how do we make some more money?
How do we have more security for our future? And sadhana is less, if anything. Preaching is less, if anything. Service to the mission of Lord Chaitanya is less, if anything. Other people are very strong grihasthas for some time. And they're thinking, I'm pure, I'm advanced, let me take sannyas. And they take sannyas. However, they have not actually understood the proper method by which, and practice that method, by which these seeds of the roots of material desires are rooted out of their hearts. And Srila Prabhupada explains in this purport today, sometimes sannyasis, they think that what have I given up? Why have I given it up? Look at how these other grihasthas are enjoying. And then he becomes overcome by those desires and cannot maintain his vows. Thus, the society has to be mature, especially in leadership, to guide people to actually make proper spiritual advancement at every stage of their life, to actually deal with the anarchists in such a way that we can gradually create a permanent solution to the problem of material desires. And in essence, Daivi Varnashram system that Srila Prabhupada expected of our society is based on pure Krishna conscious principles to train devotees in an atmosphere where they're satisfied to be Krishna conscious, to step by step, stage by stage, overcome the hurdles of illusion and learn how to take shelter at the mercy of Krishna. Learn how to sustain the sincere sadhana year after year after year. We have seen and we have heard in some places where devotees who used to think that their sadhana was the most sacred and precious principle of their life, they consider it unimportant. Why do you judge me on the basis of how many rounds I chant? And what is their emphasis usually on? The bodily concept of life. Somehow or other, Maya has compromised their intelligence. And sometimes they're not even aware that they're not making proper spiritual advancement. Therefore, it is so very important, as service to Vaishnavas, that we create an environment where each and every devotee from the first day he or she comes to Krishna consciousness to the day that person leaves the body and goes back to Godhead is given every opportunity to continue advancement and is given protection. That is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Somehow or other, by the mercy of Srimad Jai Prasad Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Jaru Maharaj, Swami Sadhvi Purushottam Maharaj, Dairam Prabhu, Lord Shanti Kaviyapani, they have asked some of us from Bombay to come here as insignificant, foolish as we are, to try to help to further develop the wonderful community of Sri Amayapur by helping to set up a Krishna conscious culture where the real needs of Vaishnavas are served throughout their entire lives. For a happy environment of service, humility, and strict principles are being encouraged in everyone's life, whoever they may be, whatever ashram or barn they may be living in. And your prayers and encouragement, we are hoping we can be of some service in some way. Today's verse is very appropriate on this particular subject. Every year the plowman files over his grain field, completely uprooting all weeds. Nonetheless, the seeds lie there, and not being completely burned, again come up with the plants sown in the field. Even after being plowed under, the weeds come up densely. Similarly, the Grihastha ashram, family life, is a field of fruitive activity. Unless the desire to enjoy family life is completely burned out, it grows up again and again. Even though camphor may be removed from a pot, hot nonetheless retains the aroma of camphor. As long as the seeds of desire are not destroyed, fruit activities are not destroyed. The process of burning these seeds, Srila Rupa Goswami explains, only comes through continuous engagement in devotional service to beginning with hearing and chanting. Other forms of yoga, karma yoga, jnana yoga, astanga yoga, they have the power of cutting the weeds to a certain extent, or directing them to grow in a particular direction. But only bhakti yoga has the power of burning this very seed of those weeds. That can only come by the mercy of Krishna. And the beginning is hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord and the association of devotees. Today is a very auspicious day. Do I have a few more minutes? It is the celebration of Sri Balaramji's Rastiyatra. In the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavata, there is a beautiful story where Lord Sri Balaramji decides he wants to visit Vrindavan. It was Krishna's desire also that Lord Balaram go to Vrindavan. Because for a long time Krishna and Balaram had left. The residents of Vrindavan were plunged in a great ocean of separation from Krishna and Balaram. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami describes in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that after Krishna and Balaram left Vrindavan, the residents, headed by the gopis and the gopas, they simply cried for the rest of their lives, continuously in separation. They were in the hope that Krishna would return sometime that day. They would be making garlands and flower canopies and preparing all sorts of nice, delicious bhoga that they knew that Krishna enjoyed, with the expectation that he would come home that day. Because after all, Akura took Krishna to Mathura. When Krishna was on the chariot, the gopis laid their bodies in front of the wheels, saying, please kill us. That is the humane thing to do. But do not let us live in separation from you. That is cruel. We cannot live in separation. At that time, Krishna gave them promise that I will return very soon. So that promise was the very means of their sustaining their very lives. But at the end of the day, when Krishna did not return, they simply continued their crying. Hope against hope, tomorrow may come. So Krishna decided to send Balaram. In this regard, it is explained that actually Krishna wanted to go to Vrindavan. But the members of the Yadu dynasty would not allow it because they knew the nature of the love of the Vrijvasis. It was so pure and so deep with spontaneous affection that Krishna was controlled by that love. If Krishna returned to Vrindavan, the residents of Vrindavan would give him so much of their love and devotion, he would be conquered by that and never be allowed, he would be unable to ever come back to live with the Yadus in Dwarka. So Krishna, subordinate to the love of his devotees, would not go against the Yadus' will. So he did not go to Vrindavan himself. So he sent Balaram to somehow or other pacify the Vrijvasis. Balaram boarded his chariot and he traveled to Gokul. When he arrived, he met with Nanda and Yashoda. He bowed down to Nanda. And then Yashoda, they placed him on their lap, embraced him, and began to shed their tears upon him. With such affection, they asked, "How are you? And how are all the great denizens of the Yadu dynasty? How are they faring? We are so happy to hear that Kamsa has been killed and you have all been relieved from the atrocities of his activities. Please tell us, how is Krishna? It is only because of yourself and your younger brother Krishna that we are being protected." In this way, Nanda and Yashoda, in great ecstasy, welcomed Balaram and expressed their great longing to be with Krishna. Then Balaramji, he met with all the different devotees according to their position. He observed Vaishnava etiquette. To those who were his seniors, the elderly gopis and gopis, he bowed down to them and very respectfully honored them with great affection and love. To those who were his equals, he embraced them and talked with them and joked with them and spoke very freely with them with intimate love. And those who were in a junior position than him, he accepted their obeisances, he gave his blessings with great love. Then the gopis, the younger gopis, they approached Lord Balaram. And they began to explain their own grief-stricken condition. That Krishna has left, but doesn't he even care for his own mother and father, Yashoda and Nanda? Look at their pitiable condition. Doesn't he even care to come see his mother and father?
He has promised to return, but he has not returned. He has not honored his promise. And as far as we are concerned, we gave up everything for Krishna. We gave up our homes, all the security of life, our reputations, everything to satisfy Krishna. And Krishna told us that I have nothing in any way that I have to repay you. He promised that he would never leave us, but he has left. And now, what is our condition? But why should we talk about Krishna? He doesn't talk about us. Why should we think about Krishna? He does not think about us. Now he's with the women of Mathura and Dwarka. But they too will be captivated by his beautiful, charming smile and his glances. And then he will leave them and they will cry like us. At this time, the Braja Gopis, thinking of the beautiful pastimes they shared with Krishna and his divine, supremely beautiful qualities, they all began to cry and cry, uncontrollably cry. But Sri Balaramji, he gave Krishna's message to the gopis and chanted the glories of gopis, of Krishna to the gopis. And in this way he pacified their hearts. This was during the months that we are observing now. And it is explained that on the full moon night, the month of Madhu, Balaramji called his own gopis to perform the rasa. Srila Srinara Swami, the original commentator of Srimad Bhagavatam, as well as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Srila Jiva Goswami, explained that when Sri Balaramji danced in his rasa lila with gopis, they were different gopis than Krishna danced. So Balaram, in a different place, in a place called Ram Ghat, which is still there today, a very, very holy place on the bank of the river Jamuna, Sri Balaramji began to sing and dance with his very confidential, pure servants, the young gopis. Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas are very, very strict to explain that the Rasa-lila of Krishna or Balaram is on the highest platform of pure, unalloyed surrender to the Supreme Absolute Truth, with no tinge whatsoever of selfish desire to enjoy in anyone's heart. A pure spiritual activity. So Krishna, or Balaramji, was singing and dancing. And at that time, Varuna, wanting to serve Balaram and the gopis, sent his daughter in the form of a beverage called Varuni, which began to flow from the trees. Now this beverage is so sweet and so intoxicating, but not like the intoxications that people take in this world. The intoxications of this world just create an artificial condition of consciousness, and they dull you, and they actually destroy your very life. But this was the pure, unalloyed offering of devotion, of love, in the form of a beverage. And Balaram and Gopi started to drink it together. And then they began wandering through the forest in ecstatic love.
Balaramji's eyes rolling upwards, was so very much enjoying this wonderful, wonderful ecstasy that he decided to call Jamuna. You come here, we want to enjoy our pastimes in your waters. However, Sri Jamuna was thinking that this Balaram is intoxicated. He's asking me to move my whole current to a different way just for him. So she ignored him. However, when a devotee ignores the desire of the Supreme Lord, we should know that we will get a reaction, whoever we may be. So Balaramji became very angry, and he took his plow, and with the tip of his plow, he placed it in Jamuna and started tearing her stream up into so many little streams. And he chastised, "Oh, wretched river, you do not surrender to me. You just see how I will take your current and make it into thousands of little streams." At this time, the personification of Jamuna appeared before Balaram. It is explained she was actually an expansion of Kalindi, who was one of the wives of Krishna in Dwarka. When Jamuna appeared with gold and pound, she said, "Oh, Balaram, you are the Supreme Lord of the universe. You are the master of all powers. I am so foolish. I did not know who you were. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I did not understand what is your powers. Therefore, I have foolishly disobeyed your command. However, at this time, I surrender myself completely to you. And you always protect your surrendered devotees. So please give me shelter and protect me." So Lord Balaramji was very, very much pleased. He forgave Jamuna. And then he and his gopis entered into the water of Jamuna and began to play their pure spiritual water sports. After some time, Sri Balaramji came out of the water, and the goddess Lakshmi, in her form of Srimati Kanti Devi, appeared to Balaramji and offered him beautiful garland of lotuses and nice, fresh, blue garments, ornaments, and flowers. Balaram accepted these offerings. Way enjoyed the beautiful full moon night that we are observing today. Bhagavata describes, Sukadeva Goswami says how even today Jamuna has many different little branches which are glorifying the great transcendental prowess. So by hearing these wonderful, wonderful narrations from the great souls like Srila Prabhupada in his books, we can gradually burn out the seeds of our desire to enjoy material life. Param Drisvani Bhagavate, the Bhagavad Gita explains, very, very difficult to refrain from material enjoyment. But if we experience a higher taste, then it is possible. Tani saravani samyavya yukta asitama vaseya sindriyani asitaka. We must simultaneously perform the tapasya of restraining our senses from their objects and fix our consciousness upon Krishna. And these wonderful festivals that have been ordained by our great acharyas are beautiful opportunities
to fix our consciousness of Krishna. Together, as a society of Krishna, celebrate Krishna's glories, develop the higher taste for Krishna consciousness.
For further details of this cassette, please contact Radhanath Swami Tape Ministry. Address is International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir, 7 KM Munshi Marg, Chowpatty, Bombay 400007, India.